something from yesterday's class? Who remembers something? Yes, Prabhu. You raised your hand first.
It's kind of interesting that...
It's kind of interesting. That's also interesting. What do you mean by that?
Shiva fought with...
Yes, so it's interesting. So what do you mean? Okay, so that question was directly addressed yesterday. Why did Lord Shiva fight? Do you remember the? Well, there were quite a few answers that were given by the acharyas. But your question is something different. About it seems to me, is that Lord Shiva's offense, you're saying, was greater. Anyone want to comment on that? Look what Indra tried to do. He tried to destroy all of Braja and all Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yasoda, and the cows. What do you think about trying to do that?
He was clever.
He was clever, but not clever enough. Look what he did. Just think of what the consciousness would have to be. Of course, we can't understand Indra's consciousness because it is so vastly more expanded than our consciousness. But he tried to destroy Vrindavan. He tried to destroy Vrindavan and all the cows and Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj and the dearest cowherd boys of Krishna. And Srimati Radharani and all the gopis were there, and he tried to destroy them. Now that's pretty extreme, isn't it? And look what Krishna had done to bring that mood, that such an inimical mood, angry mood into Indra. Krishna had stopped one of his sacrifices. Just how, when one has a false ego, it is just below the surface that we're ready to destroy the universe and everyone who we previously praised or whatever. We're ready to do anything if our false ego is pinched. This is the nature of false ego. Lord Shiva, on the other hand, was quite different. And Lord Brahma was also quite different. Lord Brahma's situation was that he tested Krishna, and he, for 1 year, he separated Krishna from his beloved cowherd boys, just separated them, and Krishna knew what was going on. But Lord Shiva's situation was somewhat different again, because if you remember, that Lord Shiva, although to be in the mood to fight and to take care of his Banasura, his arrow demon, he had to be in the mood to fight. He had to see that, and that only, that he had to protect. He was the protector of the city. But ultimately, it was to glorify Krishna, because so many people in this world worship Lord Krishna, Lord Shiva, as the supreme. So he's ultimately showing that Krishna is the supreme. And also, it shows the magnanimity of heart of Krishna. Because Krishna, the Shiva Dwara came, and he was burning up everything, turning everything to ashes. Where there is substance, he turned it to ash. And then he prayed to Krishna four prayers, and Krishna said, okay, forgive it. Protected. And Lord Shiva prayed in not very many, 6 or 7 prayers, or 11 perhaps. And Krishna said, okay, I'm pleased with you. So Krishna didn't give that reciprocation even to Lord Brahma. But that is Krishna's causeless mercy and causeless. How he chooses to reciprocate with a devotee It is very mysterious because it springs from Krishna's own desire. Very mysterious. So we can't say that Krishna must give me his causeless mercy, or why is he treating this one like that, and why isn't he treating me like, why isn't he reciprocating with me the way I want, and he's reciprocating with this one the way he wants. We can't make those demands of Krishna, and to think in that way is what? What is it to think in that way? Yeah, it's all those things, but there's some envy in the heart if we think, why? I mean, not that you were thinking in this way, but why is Krishna reciprocating with him? Why doesn't he give me that? I fairly recently heard a lecture by Prabhupada, or reheard it, from Mayapur in 1976. And Prabhupada was so biting. He was so heavy. He was speaking without using any words, the name of the devotees. But there must have been something, some local Mayapur between God-brother politics going on. And Prabhupada said in a very cutting and very heavy way that there are some devotees who want something from the service of their spiritual master. And if you want bricks, meaning the buildings, Krishna will give you the bricks. But he said it in a much more dramatic and heavy and heartfelt way than I'm saying it now. But there are other devotees, and he was speaking about spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, who want nothing but service, and Krishna will give them that. So we can say that it depends how Krishna reciprocates with us, depends what to speak of with exalted personalities, significant personalities as opposed to insignificant personalities. We can, like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, we can say that, but you said it's interesting. So I think, yes, it is interesting to compare the different reciprocations. And we could say that it depends upon the desires of the living entities. And there and we've also heard a very sweet explanation of why Krishna reciprocated with Indra in the way he did. And Lord Brahma, he basically ignored Brahma. It's because Brahma separated Krishna from his dear devotees, the cowherd boys. And as we mentioned yesterday, it was so extreme that Lord Brahma was angry. Excuse me, Balaram himself was angry at Krishna for allowing it to happen. Because it happened on Balaram's birthday. And Balaram wouldn't go out the remaining days of the year, as soon as he understood when Krishna withdrew some of his yoga maya. He wouldn't go out in the cowherding. He was so angry at Krishna for allowing the boys who share such loving affection with Balaram and with Krishna to be separate from him. And on the other hand, we have heard that with Lord Indra, he brought all the Brijbasis together under Giriraj. Yes. All together. And then all the Brijbasis were so happy because they could just look at Krishna. All the Brijbasis were happy except for whom? Yes. Mother Yasoda. Because Krishna, for so many days, wasn't eating. He was playing his flute, he was doing this and that, and this is what caused Mother Yasoda so much anxiety, because this is the nature of a lover of Krishna, especially the Brijbasis, especially Vatsalya Bhav, as they are simply focused in according to their mood in pleasing Krishna. To separate Krishna from those who are dear to him and who know nothing else but Krishna, this is not appropriate for anyone. And it caused Balaram anger So imagine how intense it actually was. How much love actually exists between Krishna and his devotees. And this is what we see in the Bhagavatam. Again and again and again. So the love of Krishna or bhakti is so powerful. It is so powerful that it captures Krishna. Padam ekam nagacchati, cannot leave braja. It captures Krishna. Bhakti controls Krishna. So there is a point on the power of love for Krishna that will come out in today's, the pastime we'll read today. Remember, these are not stories, but they are lila, or plays, or dramas, or pastimes presented by Krishna. And these pastimes, they teach us so much. But more than they are meant to teach us even, they are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna and his devotees. So we could say that the lila is higher than the lesson, because the pastimes are ultimately meant for Krishna's pleasure, not to provide us even with directions. But yes, they are that too, but ultimately, although Krishna does many things at one time, they are meant for Krishna's pleasure. And we watch the interactions between Krishna and his devotees. You see this so much in Krishna Lila. We see it in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. We see it throughout the Bhagavatam. We see it in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dealings with his devotees. He's teaching through his words to his devotees, through his devotees' words, through the devotees dealing with each other. So there's nothing accidental or casual that happens. Only wonderful things happen in Krishna's lila. Anyone remember anything else from yesterday's class? Yes. We can say adharmic. Yes, in other words, not according to the proper principles of religiosity. So what's the point? So what's the conclusion on that? So it appeared that Usha and Aniruddha were acting adharmically, not according to the proper codes of proper conduct, and yet it is said that Krishna, Lord Shiva said that Krishna comes to establish the principles of Dharma. So what? And therefore, what's the conclusion?
Therefore, that is justice.
What's justice? We want a definitive conclusion. Because the purpose of mundane Dharma or morality, etc., is to support. They're used as a support for true religious principles. They're essential to support true religious principles, but yet they are different from true religious principles. Even to the degree that he was to protect his concept of Dharma, which was ultimately very self-centered, and when Krishna was defying his Dharma, he came out to fight with Krishna with 500 what? Bows with 1,000 arms, 1,000 arrows, and 500 bows, and he was trying to kill Krishna. So how attached he was to his adharmic concept of Dharma and not understanding what real Dharma was, and therefore he's considered Mana Asura. He's an Asura. But he had a great protector, and he had great, what else did he have that was great? He had a great protector, a guardian in Lord Shiva. And what else did he have that was great?
City.
Huh?
City, army.
Not really great.
He was
a character, definitely. But
sometimes.
No, but what was his, that's why when Lord Shiva, Krishna accepted the principle. No, something wonderful. Yes, but there was something else why Krishna said, I have vowed to protect of Prahlad Maharaj. So he was born in the dynasty of Prahlad Maharaj. And how? And Lord McSringadev had promised to liberate all the descendants. How many? Was it 21 or descendants before and after Prahlad Maharaj? And he was the great grandson, the eldest of Bali Maharaj's sons, Isbana. But because he was a daitya, he had that tendency. So he had to be cured of that tendency. And often the way that we get cured by our demonic tendencies, because demonic, what is asura bhav? It means opposition to Krishna. It means placing ourselves in the center. So often we have to get cured by that tendency, by getting all our arms cut off, two by two by two by two. And then as Srila Prabhupada once said, an old man cannot be proud. Why? Because in our life we have opulences or abilities, or our shaktis, or our arms by which we can do things and which we accomplish things. We have our strength, we have our wealth, whatever wealth we have. We have intelligence, our beauty, etc., our friends, our influence. And as we get older, we lose our strength. And how we could run previously, and we no longer can run. Our intelligence, our eyesight previously worked. Our teeth could cut food. And now, one by one, this is what happens as one gets older. One by one, our arms, our abilities are removed noticeably, until at the end we are left quite embarrassed with no ability to do anything by ourselves, and we're completely dependent on others. And to be completely dependent on others, especially when we've practiced in our life to cultivate our independence, I depend on no one. I am my own person. I trust myself. It's great humiliation. Great humiliation. Bitterness. The whole life tastes like ashes. What do ashes taste like? Did you ever brush your teeth like with ashes? Did you? Yes. Village boy. Did you ever brush your teeth with ashes? It's going to be on your next exam. Describe the taste of ashes. Anyway, unless they're not, it's not very tasty, it's dry. Dry and tasteless. So that's what life comes to be unless one has cultivated his dependence upon Krishna. And a serving mood. External, internal. Towards the end of life, the ability to do any service externally can be removed, unless our service is to teach others how to die in good consciousness. But internally, we can still make offerings forever. So, now the next pastime that we're going to read is a very, very simple one, but a very mysterious pastime. And this pastime happened before the pastime that we just heard. And we'll see why. So, it begins. Sri Badarayani said, who is Badarayani? O king, speaking to Maharaj Prickett, who has very few days left. Now it's nearing the end of the 10th canto. Why don't we all call each other and see what happens? It has a will of its own. What color is your phone? What color is your phone? Maharaj Prickett is being spoken to by Srila Sukadev Goswami. O King, one day Samba, Prajumna, Charu, Banu, Gada, and other young boys of the Yadu dynasty. So they're young boys, and since Aniruddha is the son of whom?
Pradyumna.
So we can understand that this took place before Pradyumna's marriage and the birth of Aniruddha and the growing up of Aniruddha, etc. This is when these boys were still young, the princes of the Yadu dynasty. So one day, Samba, Prajumna, Charu, Banu, Gada, and other young boys of the Yadu dynasty went to a small forest to play. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments in a very concise way. In this chapter, Krishna rescues King Riga from a well and hears about his giving charity. In this way, Krishna instructs his duly frightened devotees about charity and devotion to brahmanas. Duly frightened. Why are they frightened? Second verse. After playing for a long time, the boys became thirsty. As they searched for water, they looked inside a dry well, and they saw a peculiar creature. The boys were astonished to behold the creature. A lizard who looked like a hill. He was large. They felt sorry for it and tried to lift it out of the well. They caught onto the trapped lizard with leather thongs, ropes made out of leather and threads and different leather strips. And then with woven ropes. But they could not lift it out. So they went to Lord Krishna and excitedly told him about the creature. So there was a creature. So they were young boys. And they went to their shelter, their father, Lord Krishna. And they were very excited. We found this lizard in a well. He was huge. We tried to pull him out. We used leather. We tried to rope him and pull him out. But we could not get him out. The lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, maintainer of the universe. So he's Bhagavan Vishwabhavana. He went to the well and saw the lizard. Then, with his left hand, he easily lifted it out. He's maintaining the universe. Nothing is difficult for him. And touched by the hand of the glorious Supreme Lord, the being at once gave up its lizard form and assumed that of a resident of heaven. His complexion was beautifully colored like molten gold. And have you ever seen molten gold? I went to the Perth Mint just to see the color of Taptakanchana Gaurangi. I've told you what it was like. Have you ever seen molten gold? No? Yes? In movies, but it's different. Yes, you've seen it? What does it look like? It's very bright. It's almost not of this world. It's effulgent. It's actually effulgent. And it appears to have an effulgence. And it's like Aruna color. It's yellow and reddish yellow, yes? That's what I remember. You want to say something about it? Just very effulgent and golden. So his complexion was beautifully colored like molten gold, and he was adorned with wonderful ornaments, clothes, and garlands. So this must have been quite astounding. This huge lizard was in the well, And Krishna extended his left hand. Was it left hand?
Yes.
And as soon as he touched the lizard gave up being a lizard. He shed his lizard reptile body. And instead, he turned into an effulgent demigod-like creature, all decorated with jewels and fine cloth, wonderful ornaments, garlands even. He even had garlands. So Lord Krishna, who knows another example of someone shedding his body? The other one's a serpentine body. Who? Yes. That's one of my favorite pastimes too. Because while Krishna was going to rescue Nanda Maharaj in Ambikavan, just by accident, practically speaking, of course, when we're dealing with Krishna, there are no accidents. But circumstantially, just as he was going to Nanda Maharaj, he happened to touch the serpent with his lotus foot, and immediately the serpent gave up his serpent's body, because serpents are known to be able to give up their bodies. And then he assumed the form of the Vidyadhara. And that chapter is such an interesting chapter. Does anyone remember which chapter that is? It's right after the Rasa dance, 34, and right before the Jugal Gita, where the gopis are singing songs of separation from Krishna while Krishna is in the forest. So we see both of those entities killed in that chapter, the Vidyadhara and who else was killed in that chapter? 34, Sankalchuda. Both of them were proud. And because of their pride, when they came in contact with Krishna, Vidyadhara was proud of his beauty, and Sankalchuda, because of his wealth, being an associate of Kuver. And both of them, when they came, or Sankalchuda, when he came in contact with Krishna, he was envious. So pride goeth before the fall. Pride. Indra became proud. Brahma wanted to test his powers. Banasura was proud. This is the Asuric mentality. So in any case, Krishna understood the situation, but to inform people in general, he inquired as follows. Who are you, O greatly fortunate one? Why was he fortunate? Because he was obviously so pious. And he was so powerful and beautiful and effulgent. Seeing your excellent form, I think you must surely be an exalted demigod. Then the obvious question. Seeing you in this form, what did you do that caused you to be in the form of a lizard? Because you were in a lizard and we touched you with our left hand, and then you assumed this form. But what was it that you had done that made you become a lizard? So this story of what actually this king Nriga had done that made him become a lizard is well known, but Krishna is going to have King Nriga say it again. It seems that you did not deserve such a fate. How did you get in that situation? Oh, good soul. We are eager to know about you, so please inform us about yourself, if, that is, you think this is the proper time and place to tell us. This is Krishna, very respectful. Krishna always sets the example of respectfulness in dealings, too. Before Krishna killed the washerman, even when he entered Mathura, he was very polite, and he offered him a chance to act properly, and then when he didn't, He was warned and then he was killed. But here, please tell us how you got into this situation. So Sukadeva Goswami explains. Thus questioned by Krishna, whose forms are unlimited, the king, his helmet as dazzling as the sun, bowed down to Lord Madhava and replied as follows. Maybe you can check in the previous chapter and see if did Banasura bow down to Krishna? To Lord Shiva. I remember there was some. But he never bowed down to Krishna.
He did after Krishna.
The Shiva Dwara? So Banasura also does. Head to the ground. And then, and before that, the Shiva Dwara? Did he? And what, let's see how the description of that. So, did he bow down with his head? No. Oh no, you get one chance only. Go ahead. What?
That was
to Lord Shiva. The question is, did the Shiva Dwara bow down? But he didn't touch his... Because everyone ultimately is meant to bow down to Krishna. So, and this is very much the point. One by one, everyone bows down to Krishna. And what does bowing down signify? Surrender. So he bowed down to Lord Madhava. Madhavam Panipat Yaha. Thus questioned by Krishna, whose forms are unlimited, the king, his helmet is dazzling as the sun, bowed down to Lord Madhava and replied as follows. King Riga said, I am a king known as Nriga, the son of Ikshaku. Perhaps, Lord, you have heard of me when lists of charitable men were recited. And the little purport here is that there is no doubt you have heard of me. You've heard of me, haven't you? Perhaps you've heard of me when you're the most famous at something. So this King Nriga was exceptionally well known for his giving of charity. So what could possibly be unknown to you, O Master? With vision undisturbed by time, you witness the minds of all living beings. Nevertheless, on your order I will speak. Purport, since the Lord knows everything, there is no need to inform him about anything. Still, to fulfill the Lord's purpose, King Nriga will speak. But very interesting, the qualities of Krishna. Nothing is unknown to him. Avviditam natta sarvabhutatma shakshina. You are undisturbed by time. Your vision is not disturbed by time. And you witness the minds of all living beings. What do you think of when you read that, when you hear that? Nothing is unknown to you. Your vision is undisturbed by time. And you witness, you know, the minds of all living beings. Now, what do you think when you hear that? What do you think? What do you think? I mean, actually, what do you think? Usually when we hear things, sometimes we don't think. But how does this react in your consciousness? To be dealing, because this is Krishna. We're dealing with a person who knows all things. His consciousness is undisturbed by time. And he knows the minds of all living beings. How does that react in your consciousness? He knows what's on your mind. We also want to hear at that time, most merciful one, and oh, most forgiving one. Lately I've been taken to saying that, just imagine, because we walk around day long and we have our interactions with people. Just imagine if there was a loudspeaker directly connected from our mind to the world. Just imagine how many friends we would have. Only Krishna, probably. So he's telling his story. I gave in charity as many cows as there are grains of sand on the earth, stars in the heavens, or drops in a rain shower. So the BBT purport says, the idea here is that the king gave innumerable cows in charity. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a little something that's interesting. He says, according to the previous authorities, these phrases indicate only that the king gave innumerable cows in charity. Others say that Nriga's statements about the number of cows donated are exactly true, because a single cow given in charity at such a sacred place as Kurukshetra, or at such times as an eclipse of the sun, is equivalent to giving 10 million cows in charity. Because the point being that it's inconceivable that anyone could give that many cows in charity, or improbable, or not possible. So either it gives an indication of just that he was so charitably disposed, or it's literal, exact, but the factor of the time and the place multiplies the amount, the equivalency. Young, brown, milk-laden cows who were well-behaved, beautiful, and endowed with good qualities, who were all acquired honestly, and who had gilded horns, silver-plated hooves, and decorations of fine ornamental cloths and garlands. Such were the cows, along with the calves that I gave in charity. What a wonderful picture. They all were young. In other words, to give a cow in charity that's old means you're giving away your burden and making it someone else's burden. Brown, they were giving milk. They were not dried up, so they were valuable. They were well-behaved, not a crazy cow who kicks and gives trouble. Beautiful, endowed with good qualities, means very gentle and fine form. Who are all acquired honestly, because to give charity of something that is acquired not honestly is very dangerous type of charity to receive, and it's not really charity. It's not proper charity when you give something that it doesn't have value, that you don't want anymore. Who had gilded horns? What does gilded horns mean? Golden plated. Silver-plated hoofs and decorations of fine ornamental cloth, garlands. Such were the cows, along with their calves. Not only the cows, were the calves, so that they would be giving milk. That I gave in charity. I first honored the Brahmins. This is text 14 and 15. Who are recipients of my charity by decorating them with fine ornaments. So he was such a generous person. Generous and benevolent, charitable, that's the word I was looking for. Those most exalted brahmanas whose families were in need, were young and possessed of excellent character and qualities, they were qualified. In other words, he was acting really appropriately for a king. Dhanam ishwara bhavam cha. Charitable. They were dedicated to truth, famous for their austerity, vastly learned in the Vedic scriptures, and saintly in their behavior. I gave them cows, land, gold, and houses, along with horses, elephants, and marriageable girls with maidservants, as well as sesame, silver, fine beds, clothing, jewels, furniture, and chariots. In addition, I performed Vedic sacrifices and executed various pious welfare activities. So what is the indication? What could he tell about this person?
I give charity to 5 persons.
And he was so generous. I mean, not only he gave charity, because But he was generous in his giving. His heart was giving and generous because he didn't have to do all of this to be considered charitable if he didn't give the cows so finely decorated or if he didn't also give beds and clothing to the Brahmins. He would have still been considered extremely charitable. So his heart was so generous. He was giving and giving and giving. So this is extraordinary that someone is so generous as this. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur describes more. This verse gives the details of Nriga's acts of charity. King Nriga said, I gave to Brahmanas who are well known for austerity and well versed in the Vedas because of their diligent study. Verse 15 describes other things he gave in charity. Beside giving to the Brahmanas, he also built water tanks and wells for the general populace. These are prescribed in Manusamhita and other Dharma Shastras, pious acts that everyone should perform to increase their piety. This is punya. This is piety that brings great results. And now, here comes the drama. Once a cow belonging to a certain first-class brahmana wandered away and entered my herd. Unaware of this, after all, he had to give that much charity, you need that many cows. So he had a huge number of cows, an inconceivably huge herd of cows. So one time, one cow left the herd of a true brahmana and wandered into his herd, and unaware of this, unintentionally, not on purpose, with no malice, with no cheating tendency, I gave that cow in charity to a different brahmana. Because again, the question that Krishna had asked him was, what caused you, who is such an effulgent person, to gain that much effulgence and power and beauty as the demigod King Nriga had, meant that he had incredible piety, because piety causes beauty, piety causes opulence, wealth, piety causes strength, previous pious activities. So the two seemed incompatible. How could such a pious person have acted so impiously to have been in the body of a lizard? So when the cow's first owner, Srila Sridhar Swami, this is the comment purport by Srila Sridhar Swami or by VBT purpose, explains that the term Dvija Mukhya, first class brahmana, here indicates a brahmana who has stopped accepting charity and would thus refuse to accept even 100,000 cows in exchange for the cow that had been improperly given away. When the cow's first owner saw her being led away, she said, "She is mine." The second brahmana, who had accepted her as a gift, replied, "No, she is mine. Nriga gave it to me." As the two brahmanas argued, each trying to fulfill his own purpose, they came to me. One of them said, "You gave me this cow." And the other said, "But you stole her from me." Hearing this, I was bewildered. He was bewildered on how to get himself out of this difficult circumstance. Finding myself in a terrible dilemma concerning my duty in this situation, I humbly entreated both the brahmanas, "I will give 100,000, 100,000, 1 lakh of the best cows in exchange for this one cow. Please give her back to me, either one of you." His fault was so unintentional and minor. "Your good, please give her back to me. Your good selves should be merciful to me. Brahmins are merciful. Be merciful to me. I'm in this circumstance. I didn't consciously do anything wrong. It is my fate that this has happened. Be merciful. Take 100,000 cows in exchange for this one cow. I did not know what I was doing. Your good self should be merciful to me, your servant. I was serving you when I made this mistake. Please save me from this difficult situation, or I shall surely fall into a filthy hell. The present owner of the cow said, I don't want anything in exchange for this cow, O king. And he went away. The other Brahmana declared, I don't even want 10,000 more cows than you're offering. And he too went away. What a circumstance. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. I do not accept gifts from kings. Saying this, the Brahmana gave up his cow and left. The other Brahmana refused, also saying, I'm not willing to give up this cow even for the lack of cows you mentioned, or even for another 10,000 cows in addition to that. He also left. O Lord of Lords, he's speaking to Krishna, O Master of the Universe, the agents of Yamaraja, taking advantage of the opportunity thus created, later carried me to his abode. So after he died, Yamaraj, his Yamadutas, they carried him to Samyamani. There Yamaraj himself questioned me. Purport. According to the Acharyas, the king's performance of fruitive activities had previously been flawless, no mistakes. But now, an inadvertent discrepancy had arisen. And so when the king died, the Yamadutas took him to the abode of Yamaraj called Samyamani. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, this took place after the king had died. 23. So Yamaraj said, my dear king, so he understood the situation. He said, my dear king, do you wish to experience the results of your sins first or those of your piety? Indeed, I see no end to the dutiful charity you have performed or to your consequent enjoyment in the radiant heavenly planets. I replied, so he was going, he could have had endless enjoyment. And he replied, first, my lord, what would you reply? When you're eating your prasadam, do you save the best thing for last or do you eat the best thing first? What would you have done?
Now we know.
Huh?
Now we know.
Now we know what? Anyway, we'll talk about that after. But what he did, first, my lord, let me suffer my sinful reactions. I mean, fairly typical, because if you have a lot of enjoyment that you're involved in, but you know that later on you're going to do the suffering, it's very difficult to enjoy yourself. But if you know I've gotten the hard part out of the way, the difficult part, then you can really enjoy yourself. So he replied, first, my lord, let me suffer my sinful reactions. And Yamaraj said, then fall. At once, the power of Yamaraj is so strong. At once I fell, and while falling, I saw myself becoming a lizard, O master. So, and here's where the Prabhupada, where I couldn't find if any, I don't know if any acharya said this, exactly where Prabhupada got this from, or what, there's no explanation. But he says in the Krishna book, the superintendent of death, who asked him whether he first wanted to enjoy the results of his pious activities or suffer the results of his impious activities. Seeing that the king had executed so many pious activities in and charities, Yamaraj also hinted that he did not know the limit of the king's future enjoyment. In other words, there would be practically no end to the king's material happiness. But in spite of this hint, the king, bewildered, decided first to suffer the results of his impious activities and then to accept the results of his pious activities. Therefore, Yamaraj immediately turned him into a lizard. So why bewildered? Why bewildered? Did you note if any of the acharyas comment on this? Why bewildered? Yes, 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 yes. But why is it, the fact that the referring to his bewilderment is that he chose to get the bad out of the way before enjoying the good? It doesn't seem to be, the devotional part doesn't enter in. It doesn't seem to me. Yeah, there's no mention of it anyway. Yeah? But it's a choice that we would probably also make, because again, the same point is, if, or at least it's conceivable that you'd think, let me get the bad out of the way. I have so much good and one bad thing. And if I'm enjoying all that good thing, knowing that I'm going to have to become a lizard next, then how am I going to properly enjoy? He didn't know he was going to be a lizard, but he said, I'm going to have to go to hell. I'm going to have to suffer hellishly. Anyway, that question is always, I think it comes up many times when you, or at least when you read this, what is exactly the bewilderment in it? But it is basically that. But it is from the karmakanda point of view. That's my conclusion on it. Because the idea of karmakanda is you perform charity, you perform pious activities. And the idea of the Kama Mamangsa philosophy, basically, is that the material world is eternal and there is no other reality other than the material world. There is no spiritual kingdom that you're supposed to escape to, escape the material world, escape from the material world and go to. There's no alternative destination, basically. It's just the material world. So the purpose of the material world is to, or soul's activities in the material world, is to engage in unlimited pious activities, perform sacrifice, and attain swaga. Perform sacrifice, that's the Karmakanda Vedic verse. By sacrifice you will attain swaga. Does anyone know that one? The Sanskrit of that one? Do you know it? Perform sacrifice and attain swaga. So you perform enough pious activities, you'll live, practically speaking, forever, incalculable, in human years. We think of living 100 years and that's living a lot, but you can live for thousands and millions and millions and millions of years in the subtle heavenly realms. And the idea is there, perhaps you can perform more pious activities instead of just burning your previous pious activities and deal with the other one later, and just keep your pious activities always keeping you afloat. That's the basic idea of the Karma Mamangsa philosophy. But the flaw in that philosophy is that you cannot, and it's exhibited here perfectly, there will always, because this is the material world, you will always commit some type of a mistake in your piety. There is always going to be some type of imperfection in your performance of your pious activities, and therefore you will have to suffer for that imperfection. It's not possible to continuously and only perform piety. And therefore always keep yourself floating in heaven, only and always. It's not actually possible. I believe Baladeva Vidyabhusana somewhere comments on this point. So from the karmakanda point of view, it's better to enjoy. And this is exactly what they want to do. Forestall your suffering, just enjoy. But Prabhupada continues. A little bit later, he says, it appears from these statements of King Nriga that this is again from Krishna book, that persons who follow the principles of fruitive activities, in other words, the Kamakanda way of viewing, and derive some material benefit, are not very intelligent. So it's not the perfection, it's not a true, and it would have been unbewildered if he chose to enjoy first, that would have been another type of bewilderment. Because if we're in the Kamakanda realm, we cannot actually be successful. Whether we choose to enjoy first, then we'll have to suffer later. And if we choose to suffer first, then we have to suffer. So you can't actually win, actually, from the spiritual perspective, not within the perspective of the Kamakanda realm, but from the spiritual perspective, you cannot actually win in the realm of karma. And this is our point. The devotee point, the Krishna conscious point, that it's better to get out completely get out of the realm of karma altogether. And don't try to seek pious happiness. Don't try to enjoy in this world. Don't try even to go to Swargaloka, perform sacrifice, increase your piety, go to Swargaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka. Don't try that. Because there's a vast difference between the material realm and the spiritual realm. Subtle material is fine enjoyment, but the spiritual realm is something very different. It's completely different. It's beyond piety. It's beyond impiety. It's on a completely different level. So let's continue here. So we've just gotten an important point, in fact, that don't try to enter the realm of the enjoyable planets or an enjoyable situation. Don't. You make one mistake, even inadvertently. What does inadvertently mean? Unintentionally, just by chance, something happens. You didn't want it to happen. You're trying to do something on the good level. But it's not possible in this world, especially in Kali Yuga. It is not possible. There will always be some flaw in every activity. But it gets more interesting here. So that's a point. A basic point, a basic preaching point. He continues in text 25, O Keshava, as your servant, I was devoted to the Brahmanas and generous to them, and I always hankered after your audience. And here is where it becomes interesting. Therefore, even till now, I have never forgotten my past life. I always hankered for your audience. Now where does that come in? There he was giving charity, piety. But now he's attained the association of Krishna. And now out of nowhere he's saying, I always was hankering for your audience, because he never forgot. Even while within the body of a lizard, he never forgot his past life. And what was it that he didn't forget in his past life that made him always be hankering for Krishna's audience? That means he wanted to always, he never forgot Krishna, and he always longed to be in Krishna's association. But there is no mention of anything. He just mentions his piety in giving cows and charity, but that is not And Yamaraj didn't mention anything to do with a truly spiritual destination or spiritual desire. Just piety and attaining the pleasure of heaven. Where did that desire to have Krishna's audience come from? That was so powerful that it actually caused him to gain the association of Krishna. So here's the purport here. And in it, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation of this point will come out. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this verse as follows. I always hankered for your audience. I was generous to the Brahmanas. I was pious. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this as follows. Since King Riga openly declared that he had two outstanding qualities, namely devotion to the Brahmins and generosity, it is clear that he possessed these qualities only partially, since someone who is truly pure would not boast about them. It is also clear that King Riga considered such piety to be a separate goal, desirable for its own sake. So he was materially pious, not perfectly pure. Thus he did not fully appreciate pure devotional service to Lord Krishna. Krishna had not been the only goal of Nriga's life, as he was for Ambarish Maharaj, even in the stage of regulative practice. Nor do we find that King Nriga overcame obstacles like those Ambarish did when Durvasa Muni became angry at him. Still, we can conclude that since Nriga was able to see the Lord for some reason or another, he must have had the good quality of sincerely desiring the Lord's association. So Srila Jiva Goswami describes it in general, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as we'll hear in a moment, will describe it very clearly what happened and how he became fortunate. Because if we actually, aside from philosophy and what we know theoretically is true and correct, when we think of what our good fortune will be, personally, individually, in the closed closet of our mind that no one else knows about, when we think of good fortune, what do we actually think about? We think of what? Very often it's to gain something on the material level that we want. Very often it's to remove some horrible misery that we don't like in our life. But what is it that causes someone to have the deepest and the true good fortune? In other words, do we actually want to go to Swargaloka? Or maybe that's not quite good enough, because the Indra's there and he gets a little more than we get. How about Janaloka, Tapaloka, and then to Brahmaloka? Raise your hand if you've been to Brahmaloka recently. No one wants to admit to it. But from what I understand, it's very nice there. I mean, it's much better than Indraloka, for example, because it's so deeply subtle and peaceful. Nothing can disturb the peace of the entities there, of the living entities, the souls who are residing there. But it's on a different level. It's all on the subtlest, and it's so close to the spiritual realm. It's really borderline. So would we like real peace? Is that what we want? Do we want freedom? There's no question of suffering there. There's no question of suffering. No suffering whatsoever. There's practically speaking no gross body for a soul. No suffering. Indraloka, Swargaloka, such pleasure. Everything is beautiful. There's no blue or red plastic bags thrown anywhere. There's no loudspeakers.
No car backups.
There's what? No horns?
Yeah,
oh yeah. Yeah, music. Yeah. None of those things. There's no pollution. The things that make us sick and disturb us in this world, starting to sound quite good, isn't it? Credit cards don't have limits, and everyone gets one. So that was more or less the consciousness of Nriga. But yet he got something more wonderful, most wonderful, unlimitedly wonderful. How do we know that association with Krishna is more wonderful than anything else? How do we really know that? Do we really know that? Do we really believe that? Association meaning association through service. Because unless we are actually convinced about that, and we won't be able to deeply give up our lesser desires. Our realizations, of course, have to become deep. But that's not exactly the topic here. Continuing with the purport, Srila Prabhupada confirms the above analysis in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that Nriga on the whole was not Krishna conscious, but yet he got the association of Krishna. On the whole, Nriga had not developed Krishna consciousness. The Krishna conscious person develops love of God, Krishna, not love for pious or impious activities. Love for Krishna. Therefore, he is not subjected to the result of such actions. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, a devotee by the grace of the Lord does not become subjected to the resultant reactions of fruitive activities. So negatively stating that since by definition, negative definition, that because Nriga suffered from the reactions of his impious activities, therefore it's clear that he didn't have love for Krishna. He was just basically materialistically pious. But yet he got this result of being touched by the hand of Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur offers the following commentary, which explains it. When Riga mentioned one who hankered to have your audience, that he always hankered to have Krishna's audience, he was referring to an incident concerning a certain great devotee King Riga had once met. This devotee was very eager to acquire a temple for a most beautiful deity of the Supreme Lord. And he also wanted copies of such scriptures as the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Being very generous, Nriga arranged for these things. And the devotee was so satisfied that he blessed the king. And this was the blessing. My dear king, may you have the audience of the Supreme Lord. From that time on, Nriga desired to see the Lord. So, something wonderful, the most wonderful thing occurred because of his charitable disposition. What verse in the Bhagavad Gita describes this principle practically? Yesham Twantagata Papam Jananam Punyakamanam. It describes that when someone is pious, although piety is not a spiritual end in itself, but when someone is pious, they're attractive to the sadhus. And the sadhus see them as someone who is worthy to give the seed of devotion to. And what is the seed of devotion? It is ruchi, it is shraddha, it is a taste. I want this. It's a taste that's not of this world. And by the blessing of this great devotee, Nriga, that taste, that desire, entered his heart that I want this. It wasn't developed at this time, but I want the audience. I want to see Krishna. And that is what saved him. Because it became his shelter, because he didn't forget his previous birth, his previous lives. He kept his remembrance. And during his horrible time as a lizard, and look at the, just, you see lizards in Vrindavan, you see lizards in, there's lizards in so many places, except Switzerland. Do they have lizards in Switzerland? Even in Switzerland there are lizards. But what consciousness a lizard has. They have horrible consciousness. Sometimes in Vrindavan we see them, they're eating bugs around the light at night in the summer, and then they become angry at each other and they eat each other. Even you see with the small ones being eaten by the bigger ones. They only see bugs. Their whole consciousness is eating bugs. And they have no heart. They have no feelings. They have no consciousness other than eating bugs. What a hellish existence this is. The terror that is always in they're always moving, stopping, moving, jumping, going here and there, and they see a bug and they're just waiting. They come out and they're always afraid and they're always causing fear. Just what a horrible situation for a soul so contracted. His consciousness is so contracted. So Nriga, in the midst of that hellish situation, and then stuck within a well, was thinking always, oh, when will I have Krishna's audience? When will I see Krishna? That desire had been born in his heart, had taken birth in his heart, due to the blessing, due to his charity, his charitable nature, actually got an eternal, a true result when in contact with a great devotee. Then his good quality became like a receptivity that he was able to perform something of eternal value instead of these temporary good type of punya activities. So then they had true worth. It's, that consciousness served him well. So, although so many things are spoken of here on many different levels, we can say that this is the most important level because this is the eternal level. We can understand on one step below this is that don't engage in material pious activities because, especially in Kali Yuga, there will be fault. And you will suffer for that. You won't get what you want. You'll help others on a certain level. And it makes you feel good when you do something good. But it is not a true solution. The true solution comes when somehow or another, by the grace of a pure devotee, a great devotee, the desire to have some contact with Krishna, even though in the beginning it has to be superficial, it has to be shallow, but that desire is actual wealth. Because going to Swarga is not actual wealth, because we will have to come down. And although it's bewildered to accept the punishment before the unending happiness, it's also bewildered to accept the unending happiness before the punishment. Because this is still in the realm of bewildered consciousness. So from the Karma Kanda point of view, my conclusion was that yes, it was foolish. From the spiritual point of view, the eternal point of view, both are foolish. And what's not foolish from the point of view of eternity, the only thing that is not foolish is awakening somehow or another, again being in Krishna's association. And that should blossom. And that is the point of our life. That should blossom. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that he just adds one little point. This devotee wanted to build a temple for a beautiful deity of Govinda and obtain scriptures like the Gita and the Bhagavatam. Being very generous, Nariga readily supplied these things. So he gave him, he fulfilled his desire. And the devotee was so satisfied that he blessed Nariga. O king, I give the blessing that you may see the Lord. From that time on, Nariga had a great desire to see the Lord. And then I'd like to finish this section, and then, because there's two parts in this chapter. There's one part about King Nariga, and then there's the lessons that Krishna himself gives the boys, the Yadu dynasty boys, about Brahmanas and how to deal with Brahmanas. And we'll try to understand the connection between these two sections. 20. Now see how his consciousness has changed. O Almighty One, how is it, he's trying to understand, how is it that my eyes see you here before me? You are the Supreme Soul, whom the greatest masters of mystic yoga can meditate upon within their pure hearts only by employing the spiritual eye of the Vedas. Then how, O Transcendental Lord, are you directly visible to me? He's become so humble. I'm seeing that which I don't deserve. I'm seeing you, the perfection. Akshanvantam phalamidam naparam vidama. I'm seeing you, the perfection of vision. And seeing Krishna is no ordinary thing. Because how beautifully the king was described when he came out of his lizard encasement. He was effulgent, he was wearing garlands. If he's so beautiful, how beautiful is it to see Krishna, the reservoir of beauty, unlimited beauty, with his effulgence. How many times more effulgent is Krishna's effulgence than was this Nariga's effulgence? And because Krishna is not bowing down to Nariga and saying, oh, you must be the Supreme Lord. But Nariga, he's immediately understanding who Krishna is, because he has some bhakti. He's been desiring to see him, even though, as Vishwanath will explain, in his karma, he had some mixture of bhakti in his consciousness because of this blessing of the great devotee. And he had taken shelter in his difficulty, he had taken shelter of that essence. He had taken shelter of the bhakti of his relationship with Krishna. That means his consciousness went there despite whatever other mixtures were in his consciousness. That's one thing, and we don't want our consciousness mixed. But yet, despite whatever other mixtures happen to inhabit our consciousness, what other desires, the ultimate question is where our shelter is. Where are we going to take shelter? That is the question, because that will determine where we go, what our future is. Because taking shelter is where what we cultivate, more or less, where our attention goes. And we do have freedom in this regard, where we place our attention. What we cultivate with our consciousness. And therefore, we are always asked to hear and chant properly Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the rest of the books in the association of devotees, to see the deities, to especially associate with devotees. So our attention comes to the devotional part of our consciousness and neglects, doesn't give attention, because that which we give attention to will expand. And we want the devotional part of our consciousness to expand so much so that there's nothing else, there's no room for anything else. So it becomes like a blazing fire of desire. And it burns to ashes all the lesser desires that we can't get rid of except by pushing them out. But by the blazing fire of our Krishna consciousness, panam dvistvena rotite, they will be dissipated, they will be removed. So therefore the hearing and chanting is the essential part of the process of our service, because it gives life to the service. It places Krishna there. It places our attention on the purpose of the service. And what's the purpose of the service? To please Krishna. It's so simple, to please Prabhupada. It's so simple in a simple sense. It's just simply to please. And that's bhakti. Simply to desire to please another by the grace of the internal energy. And it sounds so simple, but it is foreign, completely foreign to this material world, which is a world of selfishness, a world of false ego. The world of love and the world of selfishness are foreign to each other. Atmyandriya Priti and Krishna Andriya Priti. The world of love and the world of lust. So Almighty One, how is it? He's amazed that he who had just a small fragmental desire in the midst of his material piety, material desires, good as they were, how is it that my eyes see you before me? How did I get this result? You are the Supreme Soul. To see the source of all existence, the person who is the source of all existence, whom the greatest masters of mystic yoga can meditate upon within their pure hearts only by employing the spiritual eye of the Vedas, then how, O Transcendental Lord, are you directly visible to me? Since my intelligence has been blinded by the severe tribulations of material life, I've been suffering in this lizard existence. Only one who has finished this material entanglement in this world should be able to see you, because you are beyond this world, and yet I am seeing you. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. He says, both the body of a lizard and the body of a very proud demigod are unfavorable for remembrance of Krishna. And yet, he acknowledges that his memory has not been lost, and he's astonished at seeing Krishna, who is rarely seen, and he's thrilled at his good fortune. He said, how did you become visible to my eyes? Even such great mystic yogis such as Sanaka can only meditate upon you through the eyes of the Upanishads in their purified heart. They don't get Shakshat Darshan. They don't directly see you as I'm seeing you. What is more, you are directly at Hokshaja, the personality of Godhead himself who broke the cart demon. Yet you have shown yourself to such a lowly person as me, whose intelligence has been blinded by great suffering. And again, why? Because he had taken shelter of the bhakti part, that desire. The bhakti part was the desire to see the Lord, which is devotional service. Furthermore, you are only visible to those who have destroyed the age of samsara, the bondage of samsara, bhava pavarga. So why are you visible to me? Now, this is a very interesting point. Now, so why are you visible to me? I'm still in the world of samsara. It should not be so. And then he says, it happened only by the blessings of some great devotee. But that word bhava pavarga is a very interesting word. If you look in the prayers of King Muchukunda, there's a very important verse that uses this word. He says that you're only visible to those who have destroyed the bondage of samsara, bhavaga, pavaga. So, and Muchukunda, in his verse, in that verse says that this, it's a very important verse and a very interesting verse that's also quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when your term of bhava upavaga, when your term of freedom, when it's time for you to become free from material existence, when that time has come, then you will get the association of devotees. But both Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comment in this regard that this is called atishokya, if I remember correctly. Ati asayokta. Sayokti. And this means that it is a reversal of the time sequence because they're so close to each other. And the actuality is that it is not that when your time for material existence is over, then you get the association of devotees, but it's actually you get the association of devotees, and then that is the cause of the end of your material existence. So, and that is exactly what happened to King Riga. By the blessing of a great devotee, the desire to see the Lord was implanted within his heart. And that desire became his shelter, and because it, even in a miserable condition, what could be more miserable than life as a lizard, except life as the bug who the lizard is eating, perhaps. But it's even worse, the lizard, because he's preying on these bugs. What consciousness that all you're thinking about, at least the bug is thinking about light, but the lizard is thinking about bug. It's even worse. So the cause of it is just what's indicated by the word bhava-pavaga. It happened only by the blessing of some great devotee, Vishwanath said. So it brings it all together. And then he prays to Krishna. So see how much his devotion has increased. And what was his sadhana? Look what he was doing. He was just in the body of a lizard. But his consciousness was, he says he never forgot. He never forgot the Lord. I was always longing to see you. Not, what were the exact words? And I always hankered for your audience, to be in your association. So that is Krishna Smaranam. That is the sadhana. That is the essence of the practice. The consciousness, the absorption in Krishna, the mindfulness when we're doing what we're doing, whether it's in the body of the lizard or the body of a Burijan, the issue is the same. Is to be Krishna conscious, to be thinking of Krishna in a positive way, thinking of pleasing Krishna, of seeing Krishna, of being with him, of making an offering to him. So look at his consciousness. Not only he's seen the Lord, oh Deva Deva, oh Jagannath, oh Govinda, oh Purushottam, oh Narayan, oh Rishikesh. He's doing Nam Kirtan here. Oh Narayan, oh Rishikesh, oh Punyaslok, oh Achyuta, oh Avyaya, oh Krishna, please permit me to depart for the world of the demigods wherever I live. What does he want? Strangely, he has to go back to the world of the demigods. He has a demigod body, like Brahma couldn't stay, like Uddhava couldn't stay in Braja, like Indra couldn't stay in Braja. He couldn't stay directly with Krishna. But what is he desiring? Wherever I live, O Master, may my mind always take shelter of your feet. This is what he had been practicing whatever one's situation is, and this is Tateinu Kampamsa Simakshamano, Bunjane Vapma, Kripava Pakan, Ridvagva Purva, Dhanam Namaste, Jivatiyo, Mukti Sapadesa Dayabak. To fully, always, may my mind always take shelter of your feet. The purport. There's a few more verses. O David, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows on this verse. His faith is emboldened upon receiving the Lord's mercy and thus attaining the status of servitude. King Riga properly glorifies the Lord by chanting his names and then asks the Lord's permission to take his leave. The spirit of his prayer is this. O Deva Deva, God of even the gods, and Jagannath, the master of the universe. So since you are the God of gods, and I appeared to be like a god because I had so much punya, and according to Yamaraj's blessing, I got the bad part over with, and now I have the good part. And think of what would have happened if we just take it simply, he was bewildered, and what he really should have done was take the good part first. Then perhaps he wouldn't have had the fortune of always met it, because when you're with the demigods and the heavenly planets, because he would have gone to Swarga, it's much harder to think about Krishna than it is when you're if you have your remembrance in the body of a lizard and you're suffering so much, then you have no other shelter. There's no other shelter, but if you're in a demigod, golly gee, it's quite distracting. So you, of the God of the gods, and Jagannath, the master of the universe, so you're the master of the universe, so you please be my master. That is what he wants. He's in the mood of servitorship. O Govinda, please make me your property with the same merciful glance you use to enchant the cows. He wants to be enchanted. You can do this because you are Purushottam, the supreme form of Godhead. O Narayan, since you are the foundation of all living entities, please be my support, even though I am a bad living entity. O Rishikesh, please make my senses your own. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. O Punya Sloka, now you have become famous as the deliverer of Nriga. O Achyuta, please never be lost to my mind. O Avyaya, you will never diminish in my mind. Thus, the great Bhagavatam commentator, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, explains the purport of these verses, of these names. He continues, Nriga continues, I offer my repeated obeisances unto you, Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. You are the source of all beings, the supreme absolute truth, the possessor of unlimited potencies. We read these things, these names, so many times we don't even hear them and what they mean anymore. He's offering his obeisances, the son of Vasudeva, the source of all beings, the same person who is the son of Vasudeva, whose source is Vasudeva, is the source of all beings. The supreme, and not only that, he's the supreme absolute truth. He's Advaya, non-dual, Param Satyam, the possessor of unlimited potencies. He's Shaktaye. He's not, the absolute truth is not neither formless nor devoid of potencies. And there he is, standing before the king. The absolute truth, the source of everything. And he's so beautiful and effulgent. And there he is with the other sons of the Yadu dynasty. Because they're his energies, they're, in the sense of they're coming from him, in the sense that they're also persons. The master of all spiritual disciplines. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami comments that King Riga here offers his obeisances to Brahman, that is the absolute truth, who is unchanged in spite of performing activities. Also, this is a bit of a technical one here. We're not going to. It's getting late, so we won't. Oh, yes. We'll just say what the name of Krishna means in the last part. The king further offers obeisances to Sri Krishna, the possessor of the form of eternal bliss and the supreme goal of life. So Krishna's form is composed of bliss. No wonder he enchants everyone. His form is bliss. The holy name of Krishna is analyzed in a verse from the Mahabharata, which Srila Prabhupada quotes in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We'll just read the English. The word Krish is the attractive feature of the Lord's existence, and na means spiritual pleasure. When the verb Krish is added to na, it becomes Krishna, which indicates the absolute truth, the reservoir of all pleasure, the all-attractive one. Oh, look, there's a typo. I never noticed that before. About to leave the personal association of the Lord. You see that? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can note it down, and we'll just mention that to the devotees there. BBT. Having spoken thus, so he offered his prayers, his explanation, then his prayers. And then Maharaj Nriga circumambulated Lord Krishna and touched his crown to the Lord's feet. Granted permission to depart, King Nriga then boarded a wonderful celestial aeroplane, and he didn't have to go through security or anything, as all the people present looked on. So then, that's part two. Also very interesting, trying to understand this. Okay, so we'll end here, and then at exactly 1 o'clock we'll begin, and Krishna willing will finish part two in an hour. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, King Nriga ki jai, Krishna and his dynasty ki jai.